Our failures seem to shape us at least as much as our successes. The now successful writer Paul Auster has written a chronicle of early failure called Hand to Mouth. It not only details his odd and low-paying early jobs, it reprints his early efforts as a writer, which of course didn't bring in any money either. Auster is best known for his New York trilogy of literary detective novels, as well as The Music of Chance, which was adapted into a film. He also wrote the screenplay for the film Smoke and directed the companion movie Blue in the Face. Here's a reading from the opening of Hand to Mouth.
In my late 20s and early 30s, I went through a period of several years when everything I touched turned to failure. My marriage ended in divorce. My work as a writer foundered, and I was overwhelmed by money problems. I'm not just talking about an occasional shortfall or some periodic belt tightenings, but a constant, grinding, almost suffocating lack of money that poisoned my soul and kept me in a state of never-ending panic. There was no one to blame but myself. My relationship to money had always been flawed, enigmatic, full of contradictory impulses, and now I was paying the price for refusing to take a clear-cut stand on the matter. All along, my only ambition had been to write. I had known that as early as 16 or 17 years old, and I had never deluded myself into thinking I could make a living at it. Becoming a writer is not a career decision like becoming a doctor or a policeman. You don't choose it so much as get chosen. And once you accept the fact that you're not fit for anything else, you have to be prepared to walk a long, hard road for the rest of your days. Unless you turn out to be a favorite of the gods, and woe to the man who banks on that, your work will never bring in enough to support you. And if you mean to have a roof over your head and not starve to death, you must resign yourself to doing other work to pay the bills. I understood all that. I was prepared for it. I had no complaints. In that respect, I was immensely lucky. I didn't particularly want anything in the way of material goods, and the prospect of being poor didn't frighten me. All I wanted was a chance to do the work I felt I had it in me to do.
Paul Auster, how did you come up with the idea of devoting a book to this rocky start you had as a writer when you were making some wrong decisions and having to do a lot of other work just to stay alive and ending up being poor anyways?
I think I've walked around with the idea to write a book about money for about 20 years. I find a very compelling subject. And what I originally thought would be a kind of philosophical essay, in fact, I had a title for many years called Essay on Want. As I began to approach the moment of seriously undertaking the project, it became more and more, how shall I say, autobiographical. And rather than doing it as a theoretical essay, I decided that maybe it would be more interesting to sort of tell it through the lens of my own personal experiences.
You had a lot of jobs during your so-called hand-to-mouth period, from being a teenager to, you know, through your 20s when you weren't able to really make a living through your writing. Of all those jobs, what was the most meaningful and what was the most meaningless?
I think the most meaningful job, at least the one that I learned the most from, would probably have been working on the oil tanker. But of course, that lasted longer than most of the other jobs I had. Is a very rich experience, one that I continue to think about often. And this was 1970, so 27 years ago I was on that ship. And I remember it vividly. In fact, more vividly than most little periods of my life. This is about 6 months of my life was spent doing that. The least meaningful job, I think, would have to be some of the translations I did later. There was a period of about 5 or 6 years when I tried very hard to make my living as a translator, and there were so many books, assignments that I took on that were so uninteresting, and the books were so dull, and sitting at your desk grinding out something which you knew was not worth anyone's time to read could be very demoralizing. I think I preferred washing dishes than actually translating bad prose.
You had an offer to write pornography, but you couldn't do that very long. What was your problem?
I tried. I just couldn't think of enough adjectives to keep going. I think I was even combing through a thesaurus to try to liven things up. But I did later, I must say, meet up with someone, another young writer, struggling young writer, who in the course of 20 weeks wrote 20 pornography novels. And he told me that whenever he got stuck, he didn't know what to write next, he would add the next sentence would be, then the telephone rang, and he would do the telephone conversation. If he would wake up in the morning, which would happen, he'd forgotten what he had written the day before, he wouldn't look back and try to make sense of the book. He would just start a new chapter with, everything I've written so far is untrue. This is the real story. And then he would just launch into something else.
That's great. But you couldn't try that yourself, huh?
Well, I guess I just never thought of that. I wasn't equipped to do this job.
So you were desperate for another alternative, and you came up with one.
Well,
Action Baseball.
Action Baseball, which that was surely the nuttiest thing I've ever been involved in.
Tell us what it was.
I'll tell you what it was. It was a card baseball game that I invented. I had a friend from college who came to visit me. He had been traveling around the country and had landed in New York again and was working in a toy store as part of the Christmas help, the Christmas season, Christmas shopping season help. We started talking about what was in the store, and somehow this conversation jogged an old memory, which was that when I was a kid, maybe 12 years old, I had figured out a way to play baseball with a deck of cards and had done this every now and again to amuse myself on rainy days. And I remembered this game, and I started thinking about it and realized that if I made up a new deck and really integrated all the rules of baseball into it, it was doable and it might be interesting, and maybe other people would be interested. And I just went off half-cocked, spent, I would say, weeks and weeks sitting down, figuring out the rules of this game, and then making up the cards by hand. And then I went out on this crazy Quixotian journey to try to sell this game to a game company. And, of course, nothing ever came of it. But I must have spent anywhere from 6 to 9 months of my life pursuing this thing.
At some point, you decided to try writing a detective novel. You'd read a lot of detective fiction, I guess thought you could do it yourself and that it would be saleable. Tell me more about why you decided to head in that direction, because in the past what you'd published was plays, poetry, mm-hmm. translations.
That's right, book reviews, essays, but no fiction up to that point. Well, this came at probably the grimmest moment of all these struggles. We're talking about the late 70s now, 78. I was so stymied in my own work. I really hadn't written anything much for months. And one night, lying in bed with tormented insomnia, for some reason, an idea for a detective story popped into my head. And the next morning, I thought, well, listen, why don't you just sit down and do it? It's not as though you're writing anything interesting. It's not as though you have a job right now. Everything you've been trying to do is leading nowhere. Sit down, do this, see if something can come of it. And that's what I did. I literally the next day, I started writing this novel. And it took me not very long. I worked very hard, very quickly, you know, two months perhaps, 2.5 months, I finished the book, and I didn't see why it couldn't get published. But here again, my own stupidity and lack of experience interfered, and I had no agent. I didn't even know how to get a literary agent. And I didn't really have any good contacts among publishers for this kind of thing. And the book never really got anywhere. And just a few months after that, my marriage broke up, my father died, all kinds of other things happened, and the book was put to the side for a number of years. And later on, another crazy story, maybe about 4 years later, someone I had met only once a number of years before called out of the blue and said, "I'm starting a publishing company. Do you have any books you would like to give me?" I said, "Well, you know, there is this manuscript I've had in my closet for the last 4 years. Maybe you'd like to take a look at that." So I sent it to him, and indeed he liked it and set out to publish it. But he was not much of a businessman either. And the book was printed, but by the time it was done, he had no money left. He had no distributor. And the book was stuck in a warehouse somewhere in Brooklyn. And as far as I know, it's still there 20 years later or 15 years later. But at that point, I knew a little more about things, and I finally did get an agent, and the book finally was published as a paperback.
And that kind of opened up a new career for you.
Well, no, not really. It was just a thing unto itself, a little adventure that I was glad to see completed, you know, for better or for worse. But this book that I had wanted to write for money, and it was the sole motive, was to try to put some money in the bank and food on the table. When you calculated everything up, I made $900 publishing that book. So hardly a good way to solve the money problem.
If you had decided when you were younger that the money pressure was just too much and that your responsibilities as a father were too great, and that you had to stop thinking that you'd earn your living as a writer and just, you know, become more realistic and get a full-time job that could become a career, if you had thought that, what would your career or your job have been?
Well, you see, just it's funny. At the moment when the story in Hand to Mouth stops, so I was trying desperately to find a regular job. I mean, I completely given in. I was ready to do anything necessary. The great irony of this was I couldn't find a job. I was interviewing for journalism jobs and teaching jobs, and I just wasn't getting hired. And I was on the point of, you know, doing anything necessary to rearrange this life that I had made such a mess of. And it was literally at that moment that my father died, you know, very suddenly, very unexpectedly. And because of his death, and it's such a cruel and terrible equation, I inherited a little money, and I had a little breathing room. And it gave me a little time to continue with the work I, you know, later did. And it's a terrible irony, this whole thing. And it's not as though I figured anything out. You know, a bad family event took place. You know, my father died before his time. He was only in his mid-60s. And because of that, I was able to continue. So I thank him every day of my life, you know, just for having thought about me and taken care of me in that way. And it made all the difference.
Paul Auster, his new book is Hand to Mouth, A Chronicle of Early Failure.